Welcome back to University of Minnesota Extension's Nutrient Management Podcast. I'm your host, Paul McDivitt, Communications Specialist here at U of M Extension. This is part two of our special episode on the Root River Field-to-Stream Partnership in Southeast Minnesota with Greg Klinger, Kevin Keener, and Ron Miners. If you haven't listened to part one, I recommend checking that out first. Let's jump right back into the discussion.
All right, so let's switch to the edge of field monitoring. You know, one big part of this project was installing equipment that could actually measure all the runoff coming from a specific area in the field, and you can tell where that area is, I mean, just by the slope of it and from the LIDAR data. And that equipment could then take water samples, you know, during runoff events to measure amount of soil, phosphorus, nitrogen, particularly the nitrate form of nitrogen, I guess, is what you're most interested in. Can you describe a little bit what that equipment looks like, how it worked?
Yeah, so when we say edge of field monitoring, essentially what we're trying to do is measure the total volume of water running off of the surface, off of that field. And to do that, we need to install what we call a flume. And basically what that is, it's kind of like a triangular shaped piece of a plastic or other material that is used to just that has a known geometry to it, and all the water that flows through that cross-sectional area of that flume, if we know the depth of the water through there, we can actually know exactly, quantify the exact amount of gallons of water that's running off. And so we have equipment there that is measuring the stage of the water within that flume when there is runoff occurring. And we also have a sampler in there. It's an automatic sampler that is set up to, once water is detected in the flume, it'll trigger the sampler to basically suction water into basically these 4 1-gallon containers. And it's the amount of samples it collects is proportional to the amount of flow coming through the flume. So the more flow, the more samples it's collecting. And we then take those samples and we send those to a lab, and we analyze that for sediment and nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus. And if we know the volume of water and we know the concentration, we can actually calculate the total mass or the total load of sediment or phosphorus or nitrogen that's coming off of that field. And then we usually then express that in a pounds per acre basis, because that's easier for our farmers to understand because they're used to working with those units. But really we also at these stations, we have of course rainfall and soil moisture, soil temperature at both the 6-inch depth and a 24-inch depth. And we also do a lot of other climatic data, humidity, air temperature, and other things like that help us better understand the runoff conditions.
So from these, so you have 4 sites across these 3 watersheds. So you got a range of very flat, pretty heavy soils to a little more rolling, silty soils to very silty soils that are relatively steep. How much runoff did you typically see, and how much does it vary from, let's say, year to year and site to site?
Yeah, so it's been interesting. So since 2010 through 2017, which is our benchmark baseline period, so during that 8-year period, what we found on average across these 4 edge of field sites, again, representing diversity of farming systems, we found that on average about 7% of the rain, the precipitation, both liquid rainfall and that contained within the snow itself during the frozen period, we found ran off of these fields. So that equates to about 2.7 inches. And in 1 acre inch, so 1 inch spread out over an acre, that is equivalent to 27,000 gallons of water. So that 2.7 inches equates to roughly about 70,000 gallons of water. And to our farmers, that's always a difficult, and for all of us that work with it, it's somewhat difficult to envision that amount. But that 70,000 gallons per acre, if you spread that out over 10 acres, that's about 700,000 gallons. And that's about the equivalent of an Olympic-sized swimming pool in terms of the volume of water that's coming off. And so that's, again, over every 10 acres of farmland is what we're measuring. But we'd like to express it more as a percentage of the precipitation that fell on that field. And again, it's about 7%, which is, again, that's a relatively small amount. Again, a very small amount of runoff that actually happens. So the next question is, well, what's happened in the other 93%? Well, most of that is actually either taken up by the plant, utilized by the plants, either the corn, soybean, or alfalfa crop, or it's evaporated. Some of that also then goes and infiltrates into the soil, which eventually becomes groundwater, the groundwater either that we drink or that flows to the nearest spring or stream here in southeast Minnesota, or in the case of the till area, into tile drainage. So the thing is that data, that 7%, though, is highly variable, and it really depends on the site and year, but that can range from less than 1% in a dry year to upwards of 25% in a really wet year, as in the case of 2013, when we had a lot of precipitation, especially during the month of May. But what's really interesting, what we found during this baseline period, is the fact that it's really just one or two of those runoff events through the year that actually represents over 50% of our annual loss. And that's, I think, really important. And it's something that a simple question that we had from the very beginning is just, how often does runoff occur on these field sites? And we now have enough data that we feel comfortable answering that. And what we find is that about 20 times a year is when we actually measure runoff through those flumes. Sometimes those events last only 10 minutes in terms of the flow through the flume. Sometimes it can last up to 4 or 5 days. But that's typically only happens during the snowmelt runoff period when we have kind of these freeze-thaw conditions. But that's something I think that our farmers have found very interesting. And I think when we first started the project, I know some people that have been working with soil and water conservation would have said that every time it rains, they thought we had runoff happen. And some would say that they didn't think any runoff would happen on their field. So what we found again is that runoff does not happen after every rainfall event, but it just only happens a few times of the year, and it's pretty variable too.
When are you seeing most of it? Is it, you mentioned frozen, snowmelt runoff is, obviously we see that fairly frequently. Is it mostly happening then, or is it happening other times a year?
Yeah, so what we find is that of the entire year is that we find about 40% of that runoff is happening during frozen soil conditions. So, and how we define frozen soil is when the upper 6 inches is below 32 degrees and steady. And typically in Minnesota, at least in southeast Minnesota, our frozen soil period starts usually in mid to late November and lasts typically through early April. Our frozen runoff, that 40%, majority of that is happening typically in late February, the month of March, and early April. And that was, I think, again, a really, I think, a fascinating data point that we were able to get from this, was just really that period is pretty significant in terms of the amount of volume of water. In terms of how that can relate back to farming and management, is farmers often ask, well, Kevin, what can we do about that 40%? The ground is frozen. There's not too many practices that can slow the water up at that time. And I say, you're exactly right. But what we do find during that time period is that a lot of our dissolved nutrients, especially dissolved phosphorus, occurs during that time period. And so how we incorporate our fertilizer and how we incorporate our manure is really important. Because if we have a lot of that sitting on the surface, as that water during the frozen period time can travel over the soil surface, pick up those dissolved nutrients, and carry it with the water. So trying to get the those fertilizers incorporated as best as possible is really important. Another thing is timing. Down here in Southeast Minnesota, we have a lot of livestock production, and some farmers have to do continuous year-round manure applications, and so timing that manure application and try to avoid, especially during the month of March, because that's typically the time period we're going to have frozen runoff and it can pick up some of the manure during that time period. Another one that, farmers in terms of management thing that they can do is really trying to pay attention to their soil test phosphorus levels. And because that's another factor for risk for higher, dissolved nutrients such as phosphorus getting moving during that time period.
Okay. So you had a sense of how much runoff it is, 7% on average. How much soil nitrate or nitrogen and phosphorus did you typically see in that runoff?
So over the last 8 years, again from 2010 through 2017, we've measured on average about 1,400 pounds per acre of soil loss coming off of those fields. Again, it's highly variable by site and by year. In some years we can have little as less than 1 pound per acre, and at some sites we can have upwards of nearly 10,000 pounds per acre. But on average, we've been seeing across all those sites and all those years, we've been seeing about 1,400 pounds per acre. Now, for perspective, what I always tell our growers with that number is generally what you want to try and do is try to maintain no more than about 1,000 pounds per acre of soil loss in a typical year. And so out of the last 8 years, what we found is that some sites we've been seeing that at all of our sites, actually, we've seen at least one of those 8 years we've exceeded that 1,000 pound per acre soil loss.
And the reason for that 1,000 pounds?
And the reason for that is it's really not an exact number, but it's kind of a general reference that we can use, and it's based on the soil formation rates. So typically for a lot of our soils in Minnesota and in the upper Midwest, is that if we're exceeding 1,000 pounds per acre, that's exceeding the formation rate of the soil. So if we're losing that amount, that's from a sustainability standpoint, that's not a good thing. The other reason that 1,000 pound per acre is used is, sometimes farmers can get confused by that number versus what they hear through the conventional conservation planning process or approach, which typically uses, a level of, 4 or 5 ton per acre per year. The big distinction that we have to make is that number is based on soil movement within the field. So moving, from the top of the hill down to the bottom of the hill. And so, soil conservationists will typically use that 4 or 5 ton per acre soil erosion rate as kind of a planning threshold that you don't want to try to exceed that. Now, our numbers that we're measuring at the edge of the field are actually delivery off of the field. And so that threshold is less.
So the difference there is you're looking at it essentially from a water quality perspective, because what gets off the edge of the field can eventually get into streams and rivers and lakes. Well, lakes in a different part of the state anyways, but our streams and rivers. But what's moving within the field, that's not a water quality issue, but there is some level of negative impacts in terms of crop production if you have, we've all seen fields where there's light brown soil on the kind of upper end of the hill and real dark soil lower, and it's that topsoil's been moving down with time, and so you have some impact there in terms of crop production. So I think that's an important distinction to make, is that from a water quality perspective, what you're seeing is much lower than what a farmer would typically see with their conservation planning documents.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think it kind of boils down to, as a farmer and you're looking at soil loss and soil movement on your farm is, again, yeah, that movement of soil within the field, which can directly affect your productivity over time and potential reduction in your yield potential. soil health. I know there's a lot of discussion here the last 5 years or so on this soil health topic. And you know, once that soil moves, let's say from the top of the hill to the bottom of the hill, the structure of that soil is forever changed. And what goes along with that is potential impacts on productivity. So, but like you said, Greg, that doesn't necessarily translate into a water quality problem to, let's say, the Root River.
Because most of the soil that moves within the field stays
within the field. Okay. And a lot of that is dependent, again, on practices that are happening within the field. Let's say, you know, tillage practices, grass waterways, you know, other upland practices there. But again, what we're measuring with these flumes is actually delivery off of the field, that once it leaves the field, it's gone forever. And, you know, that sediment may move down into a road ditch and collect. But then during the next rainfall event, it may then get delivered directly to the stream or make its way through the system. So, that's in terms of what we've been seeing for our sediment loss. With regard to phosphorus loss, what we find is that there's a little over a pound per acre associated with every 1,000 pound per acre of sediment. So there's this really close relationship between our sediment and our phosphorus. And so we typically see about a little less than 2 pounds per acre on average is what we've been seeing across these four fields. And so if your goal is to reduce no more than 1,000 pounds per acre soil loss, you know, that would translate into about a pound per acre of phosphorus loss is where we'd want to try to keep that at. That would be your long-term goal.
Okay.
And again, at some of these fields, we found that 50% of those 8 years, 50% of the time during those 8 years, it was exceeding those levels. And at some fields, we found that only less than 15% of the time it was exceeding those levels. So a lot of variation between fields, you know, we saw.
I have a question about this because I've seen the data for these sites, and there's something that really is interesting to me. There are years where there's a lot of runoff on all fields. But then there are some fields that clearly have more runoff than others year after year after year. But the real kicker to me is that some of the fields that consistently have a lot of runoff don't actually have very much soil or phosphorus in that runoff. And then there are other fields that consistently have high amounts of soil and phosphorus in the runoff, even though they might have less runoff overall. So what are the factors that play into that?
Yeah, it's a good question and a complicated one. And it involves a lot of different variables, but obviously, you know, how much rainfall occurs, that what we call the rainfall intensity, which is just how fast that rain comes, the duration or how long the rainfall event occurred. Another factor is what we call the antecedent moisture condition, which is just, you know, how wet was the soil prior to the rainfall event. Those are real critical factors. And then, of course, we have soil texture. And is a really key factor in soil moisture. And one thing that's been really interesting to us in the data is that we find in our glacial till area, which is in the Maurer County area, is that those fields tend to produce more runoff. And a lot of that we think is derived mainly because of soil texture and soil moisture. And so and that's why we have tile drainage to help dry those fields out, you know, during those periods of time. On our silt loam soils, it seems like they can handle and infiltrate the water a bit more. But what kind of counters that is our topography, is our steep slopes. And farmers, of course, know that. And that's why they have targeted practices like grass waterways in certain areas and other reduced tillage operations. But there's a lot of different factors. I think another really big factor is, the timing of that rainfall event. What we typically see, again, going back to this, even the sediment and the phosphorus, is that if we look at the timing of when that occurs, it's basically, you boil it down to just 2 months out of the year where basically about 80% of our sediment loss occurs and over 60% of our phosphorus occurs. And that's in May and June. And again, that's the time period when, you know, our fields are at most risk because our crops are not at full canopy. They can't intercept that rain, those raindrops, very effectively. And that's also the time period that we have these really intense rainfall events and in short duration, high intensity rainfall events, because we get these convective storms that develop and dump a lot of rain in a very short amount of time. And that's in May and June. And so that's important for a farmer to think about when they look at their fields and their farms, is to think about, you know, are the practices on my farm effective at that time? And because if we can have a really heavy rainfall event in August, even much more rainfall in terms of total amount, but yet we would have a fraction of the amount of runoff and nutrients and sediment coming in that runoff during that time period versus a May, June type of event.
Do you see more sediment movement? Let's say you had 1 inch of runoff in May and 1 inch of runoff in August. You know, so we had a really intense storm in August, same amount of runoff. Are you going to get more sediment nutrient loss in May than August, or is it about the same no matter what?
We tend to see more risk for runoff in that May period. Okay. And again, a lot of it has to do with the crop intercepting a lot of that rain and utilizing a lot of that rain at that time. Of course, the crops are taking up a lot of water at that time, so the soil can kind of act more like a sponge and soak up more of that rainfall. Whereas again, earlier in the season, the crops are just the demand for water is not as high, and so we tend to have more risk for runoff during that period.
But for the same amount of runoff, would you have more nutrient and soil in it, or would it be about the same, do you think, depending on the time of year?
Again, we typically have more.
Okay.
More, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the points in there too that you brought up was soil type being a really important characteristic. So you can actually have conditions where you had the most runoff is the flattest landscape, but it's much heavier soils. And so it's getting a lot of runoff, maybe not a lot of nutrient in soil or soil in that runoff. They can have quite a bit because of the soil texture relative to a lighter soil elsewhere.
Yeah, so we tended to find in the till soils, we tended to be on average about 700 pounds per acre soil loss is what we were finding on those fields. And that was with a typical would be a fall field cultivation, mm-hmm. Or chisel plow followed by a spring field cultivation. On our silt loam soils, what we found is that a lot of more variability, and they tended to have maybe more potential for soil loss on those fields. And in one particular field, what was really interesting, what we found was it was a field that had an existing grass waterway. It was not a designed grass waterway. It was a waterway that was just kind of left over from the transition from going from alfalfa to corn, to continuous corn silage. And so there wasn't a designed channel to the waterway. And what happened was we hardly saw any runoff during the first 3 years of the study. But then during the fourth year, we had a small, what we call an ephemeral gully that formed on the outside edge of that grass waterway. And an ephemeral gully is basically one of those gullies that forms, but then can be easily sort of removed or erased through tillage. That's what had formed along that waterway. And the reason for that is that waterway had no longer had capacity to move that water and was getting high in the middle or mounding in the middle. There's some other factors that were taking place there as well. But once that gully had formed, it basically acted like a conveyor belt in a way and just providing a very efficient way of delivering that sediment off of the field. That combined with about a 7% slope on that field, and a little bit steeper slopes, lower residue, and in some of the tillage operations, I think just provided a high risk for loss on that particular situation.
Okay. We talked about soil and phosphorus loss and runoff. What did you see in terms of nitrogen?
So for nitrogen. So we test for all different types of nitrogen. So there's what we call the organic fraction of nitrogen, then there's the inorganic. And what we tend to find is that the organic fraction, which is tends to be, of course, associated with the soil, is we tend to see about probably on average between maybe 5 to 7, maybe upwards of 10 pounds per acre of nitrogen, associated with the soil coming off of the surface. The other fraction of nitrogen that we are most concerned about from a water quality perspective, and especially in groundwater, is the nitrate, the form of nitrogen that's in the nitrate nitrogen form, which is the inorganic fraction. And what we typically see in surface runoff is a very small amount of nitrate coming off of the surface, typically less than 1 pound per acre. Now, there are exceptions to that, and that might be, let's say, recently applied fertilizer or manure that just was poorly timed, and we have a bad rainfall event, poorly timed rainfall event, and we can see some higher losses that way. But for the most part, most of our nitrogen is not coming off of the surface of these fields. It's actually where we measure it is coming out to the bottom of the fields through subsurface, either through subsurface tile drainage, but we don't have that, of course, here in the karst area, but what we do have is fractured bedrock, which acts very similar to a tile drainage system. So for instance, what we found in the till area, that is a unique site that we have because we are measuring both surface runoff and subsurface loss through the tiles, through the subsurface tile. And what we found is that if you separate out the total nitrogen that's coming off the surface versus what's coming out of the tile, we found that 85% of the total nitrogen is coming out the tile, and 15% of the total nitrogen is coming off of the surface. Now, if you're just looking at nitrate, we find that 96% of the nitrate is coming out the tile, and only 4% is coming off of the surface. So so kind of the message or the bottom line is that what we find is that the main pathway for nitrogen in these systems is through subsurface loss, through the bottom of the field, through leaching. And so we don't necessarily pick it up, off the surface. But where we do pick it up, because it's flowing through the bottom of these fields, where we do pick it up is in the watersheds or in groundwater. And so in the streams, that's typically where we see elevated levels of nitrate. And we can see, again, it ranges quite a bit, but we can see anywhere between a low of 5 pounds per acre upwards of, let's say, 30 or 40 pounds per acre of nitrate in the streams.
Yeah, that was actually fairly eye-opening for me. It's one of the things I think about and I hear frequently is the idea of nitrate getting into our groundwater through sinkholes, and the karst area of your study is, there's lots of sinkholes around there. But if you look at the water that's getting into a sinkhole, it's mostly running, over the surface is the typical pathway, or very shallowly through the ground. And if you're not picking up a whole lot of nitrate in that runoff, that's not a big way that you actually get nitrate into groundwater. And I think that was pretty eye-opening for me to see.
Yeah, it's an important point to make with regard to nitrate, is that it's sort of a landscape type of process that's occurring, and not just a really isolated type of transport mechanism. That it's really happening, the nitrate loss is happening throughout all of the cropland is, and not in just specific locations. And I would add that sinkholes, like you mentioned, that it's not a very big source of nitrate, but we estimate it's probably less than 10% of actually the groundwater, the water that feeds our groundwater is coming from sinkholes here, and actually probably maybe even much less in many other areas. But it's really just this whole entire land surface that has just, thin soils over fractured bedrock that, poses this risk for nitrate movement here in southeast Minnesota. Now, in the glacial till area, that fractured bedrock is covered by about 100 or 150 feet of heavy clay till soil. But what we do in that area is it sort of gets short-circuited by the tile system and routes it directly to the streams that way. But I would have to say on the sinkholes, what is a main concern in terms of direct delivery to sinkholes is more of how we manage our manure. And also pesticides are another key thing that if we do have a big heavy rainfall event after, let's say, a recent herbicide application or insecticide application or a manure application, that can pose a direct source to our drinking water and a direct conduit to our drinking water. So, but for with regard to nitrate, you're right, Greg, that it's more of a landscape, you know, type of pathway that's getting through and not just really, you know, specific points like sinkholes.
Yeah, it's a real interesting subject and certainly one we will revisit here in another podcast. You guys have any closing thoughts related to the conservation, the soil erosion side of this project?
I guess in terms of closing thoughts for the study itself, I think what's just been really interesting to us is just allowing us to have some real numbers on real farms here in Southeast Minnesota. And I think it's really been helpful for all of us. We've all been learning together. And I tell this to our farmers is that, you know, when I look back where we were 10 years ago in terms of our understanding of how these systems work and where we are today, we've really learned a lot and we've done it together. I've learned as much, I think, as our farmers have learned. And I think that's been very valuable. And it's, I think, really helped us just elevate the conversation about agricultural practices and water quality. And I think in many regards, it's really highlighted that farmers and landowners are really doing a really great job in terms of trying to protect water quality, trying to minimize loss. And we're always going to have runoff. We're always going to have losses. But at the same time, it's also highlighted that there are, every farm has got probably one or two locations that probably could use some attention and could benefit from additional types of practices, let's say a grass waterway or reduced tillage or things like that. I think it also, again, really highlights the importance of just probably three key things with regard to the practices is just anything that landowners and farmers can do to minimize soil disturbance on their fields, maintain cover, you know, whether it be residue or, you know, with cover crops or things like that, and grass waterways. Those are probably the three key things, I think, and maintaining those grass waterways. Again, during the walkover process, what we found was that, about a third of those practices that were inventoried, we found that were not performing the way they should. And to me, as a landowner and as a farmer, you know, that it makes a lot of sense to target those practices first, because obviously you're not taking any more land out of production. It's just simply maintaining what you already have. So
I'd say stay vigilant with your addressing your erosion problems on your farm, and don't be afraid to maybe share your successes or your failures with your neighbors on what's working and what isn't working, and reach out to the resource professionals that are right in your community. You know, the soil and water districts and NRCS and others are there to help. And so I think take those opportunities, and you've probably seen the question out there that everybody asked, you know, is your farm ready for the next big rainfall event? And think about those things.
And I would have to add too that, you know, a lot of these practices may not need a lot of engineering or may need a lot of in-depth, types of designs and engineering associated with it. And in many cases, it may be very simple for the farmer to work with their local contractor to maybe touch up a waterway or fix a pond or things like that. And especially if the farmer is not interested in, you know, receiving public cost share assistance. And in many ways that can maybe, you know, allow that producer to get those things fixed, in a maybe a faster, easier, simpler manner. And, a lot of times simpler is better. And especially for some of these lion's share of these practices, they may not require a lot of in-depth engineering and technical assistance. So,
great. Thanks, guys. One last thing. If anyone's interested, where can they go for more information about this project?
So to get more information about the River Field to Stream Partnership, you can visit, just do a Google search and type that in. And it will have a couple of different locations. One will be the Minnesota Department of Agriculture website. Another one is just the riverfieldtostream.org, a website there where we actually have some of our additional information there. Another really, I think, a valuable resource to use is a document that was actually produced by Wisconsin Discovery Farms, which is done through the University of Wisconsin Extension program. And they developed a really nice guide that highlights the walkover process. And as you as a farmer or a landowner, and if you want to kind of do this walkover on your own farm, but you need maybe a little assistance in terms of what to look for, it's an excellent guide to reference. And it's not very long, a lot of good pictures, a lot of good diagrams in there, but something that I've really encouraged any farmer or landowner to look at. And again, maybe look at their operation with a little different view of their farm. So, and again, that's it's, you can just do a Google search for that, and it's just called the Field Walkover Guide, and that was done by Discovery Farms Wisconsin.
Great. Thanks, Kevin, and thanks, Ron, for joining us today. For those listening, stay tuned. We're going to keep this conversation going with a few more podcasts about what happens to that soil when it leaves the field, you know, how much of it gets to streams and lakes, how long it stays there, and also a discussion, which we started a little bit today, but follow up on, how water moves from a field down through the soil, underground to the bedrock that, at least in this area, serves as drinking water, and what it can bring with it in terms of nitrogen, phosphorus, and other chemicals.
All right, that about does it for this special episode of the podcast. Thanks, Kevin and Ron, for joining us. We'd like to thank the Minnesota Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council, AFRAC, for supporting this podcast. For the latest information on nutrient management, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at UMN Nutrient MGMT, where you can also send us your questions for future podcast episodes. Thanks for listening.